Welcome to the Decent Rowing Podcast. My name's Lachlan. I'm here with my dad, Ken, and together we have decentrowing.com. So today we're going to be talking about the rowing finish and, you know, what we're looking at when we're thinking about having a good finish and a couple of common problems and key fixes for those areas. So where would you start when you think about the finish, Ken? Like, maybe it's important to define what the finish is first.
I consider that the finish is it's not just when the blade exits the water. I think the finish starts a little bit before that, probably 20 centimeters in front of the body, and so I'd call that the start of the finish. And then the actual finish itself is when the blade comes out of the water, in my book. Around this, of course, is that the first part of the recovery is very important as well and flows on from the finish. So the finish is not really a precise point in time. Sure, the blade comes out of the water at one point, but it's really that little bit of work before the finish to make sure you get a good exit from the water, and a little bit after the finish to make sure that you don't get caught in the water, or don't get caught, in fact, in starting the recovery. So I think the finish covers those sort of areas. The critical thing first that I see a lot, particularly with beginners at the finish, is that they're usually not rigged well for that. And Lachlan, you would have been rowing in many club boats, I'd imagine, when the finish position was pretty much impossible to get, and you really need to get that fixed before you get out on the water. So what's your experience with a rigged boat that doesn't fit like that?
Yeah, so one of the first things you learn when you first start rowing is how much room you should have at the finish of the rowing stroke, so what it means to be comfortable in the boat. The finish is one of those things where you have to move the feet backward or forward to make it so it's comfortable. If the hands are too tight at the finish, you're going to struggle to tap down, and it's going to be really difficult to get a nice clean finish. And if you've got too much width at the finish, you can end up, so if your feet are too far towards the bow, you can end up pulling the oars out of the oar locks, because you're just too far back. And, you know, also you want to have a good catch position, which is related to where the finish is, but essentially it's about being comfortable at that finish position. And for me, typically I like to have maybe one fist width between my hands, but if I was talking to a beginner, I'd definitely recommend having two and being able to just move the handles past the body at the finish. When you're sort of sitting up tall, leaning back a little bit, not a long way, you want to be able to just move those handles past if you have to.
And if you're talking about a sweep boat, then it's the same sort of principle. Sure, there's only one oar, but you need to move your foot stretcher to make sure that you're in a comfortable position at the finish. And the comfortable position in sweep is essentially you've got your outside hand pivoting on the top of the oar, as though someone put a nail through your knuckle or your main finger and nailed it to the oar, and just let your hand swivel around that, and then have it so that the handle comes past your body just a fraction, only a tiny little bit, and you'll find that's a good place for the finish. And if you're not in that position, then moving your foot stretcher will fix that, of course. Changing the inboard will fix that, but talk to your coach about it so you make sure that all the crew's set up the same way. The other thing that's critical in both sculling and sweep is to make sure you've got the handle height correctly. And you really want to have it so that the handle is at about sternum height, about where your heart strap would be if you're wearing a heart strap. And if it's higher than that, then it's, with the blade square and buried in the water, then it's very difficult to have a good finish. So the first thing I think is to check your rig, and as Lachlan says, make sure you've got it so that the hands can probably just scrape past your body if you're talking about beginners. And in sweep, have it so that it's comfortable for them sitting tall at the finish to have their outside hand pivoted a bit. But make sure, critical, that you've got the blade fully buried and it sits at about sternum height, because in either boat you'll find it's very difficult to get a good finish if you're not rigged correctly. So Lachlan, from your perspective in training for the finish, what's the way you'd start to teach people how to have a good finish?
So I think with the finish, a lot of people start with square blades and tapping out, and while that is a good exercise, it's also very difficult, and it's a lot harder than actual rowing. So if you can almost row square blades well, so tapping out at the finish, it means that you've created a nice little pocket behind the blade when you're pulling through. It means you can tap out without the blades catching on the water. That means you've got the timing of the finish right, so the power application, you're continuing to drive the boat all the way to the finish. And so if you can do that, then you're able to tap out relatively cleanly. And so when you go to feathering the blade, it's a lot easier because you're creating a bit of space to get the blade out of the water without it getting caught. With the finish, mostly for beginners, so that's probably a bit more advanced, mostly for beginners, you're really focusing on that body position, and beginners really have a tendency to sort of slump down, where you really want to be, tilting the pelvis up and really sitting on your sit bones, really. So if you sit up tall and put your hands just under your butt, and you rock forward and back, you can feel the bones of your pelvis rocking there too. You don't want to be slouched down, you want to be sitting tall like someone's pulling your hair. So that's probably the main thing that you see with beginners that I'd be focusing on first
up. Absolutely, sitting tall is critical. Curling over at the finish, you're never going to have a good finish, so you've got to sit tall as you can and draw the handle up. Now, one of the things I find easier to explain to athletes frequently is if you talk about drawing the handle up, then that means that the blade's deeper in the water, which is what we want at the finish. We want it in the water, and you want to keep a bend on that oar right the way through to the finish. If you don't sit up tall, then the handle's going to be lower in relation to the boat, and therefore the blade's not going to be as buried as well. The other thing that happens too is that people tend to frequently draw the handle down into their lap at the finish. So rather than drawing it up high and keeping the blade in the water with the pressure on until it's the tap out point, they tend to draw it down or slump down, both which make it harder to keep the blade in the water. Another way to describe it to athletes, which I've found quite useful over the years, is to, instead of focusing on drawing the handle up, is to focus on asking them to push the blade down into the water towards the bottom of the lake or bottom of the river. So putting downward pressure on the blade. With some athletes, that tends to make more sense than drawing the handle up, even though it achieves the same result, of course. But one of the critical things is for them to understand that you hold the blade, pressure on the blade right the way through to the finish, keep that puddle hole behind the blade that Lachlan was talking about, and then tap out cleanly. But if you don't have the pressure on right to the finish, then that's not going to happen. And often I hear people talk about it being the big cog of a bicycle around the finish and the small one at the catch. And I tend to not agree with that. I tend to think both of them are squarer than that. So what's your take on the, in your mind, what the shape of the finish looks like, what the path of the handle looks like, Lachlan?
So I think for most rowers, especially when they've developed a level of proficiency, the tapping down at the finish, yes, it's kind of important, but essentially once you feather the blade, the profile of that blade in regards to the water is very small. And so the actual movement of tapping down at the finish, it's probably a bit more square, but it's not a very big tap down that's required. It's more about keeping that power on all the way to the finish. And as you tap down, you start the feathering motion. So this is talking about, either sculling or sweep, but you tap down, you feather, and as you tap feathering the blade, it's coming out of the water, and the water moving past the blade will finish that feathering action. All you have to do is initiate the feather on the blade, and then the water will do the rest. And so it's really not a very big movement at the finish. It's more about keeping that power on all the way through as far as possible and then tapping down cleanly. So if you keep the power on all the way to the finish and then try and tap down right at the end, you're probably going to hit your body. You might have a really messy finish. There's a little bit of room between the hands coming into the body and the body where you have to start tapping out and backing the power off and starting that feather. But the key is to get it as far as possible without going too far, hitting the body and getting caught up there.
There's a number of drills that you can use to help with the finish. One I particularly like is the lazy feather. If you're teaching people, beginners to row, then it's because their balance isn't perhaps quite as good as it might be, then I'd suggest use the lazy feather technique. And what that is, you essentially just start the tap out, as Lachlan says, start the feathering movement, And then what will happen is that as the blade leaves the water, then the bottom of the blade might trail on the water at the beginning of the recovery. Now, that makes balance easy to achieve in the boat. And so when you're teaching beginners, I'd suggest try the lazy feather technique to make sure they get that right. In fact, I've seen athletes doing the lazy feather even when they were rowing at the Olympic level, just to reinforce that, how the blade exits the water, and reinforce the control at the finish. Then once you've got that under control, then I'd suggest another really good drill is, if you're struggling to row square blades all the time and in a single scull with beginners, it can be a bit problematic, is to have a delayed feather. Now, there's two sorts of delayed feather in my book. First one is you tap it out quite firmly and then feather. And so it's tapped out square and then you feather. Now, I think it's probably better to make the delay a lot smaller than that, and you'll find that if you tap out and then immediately feather it, rather than tapping it out and then waiting, so tap out then feather immediately, then you'll find that it's still a bit of a delayed feather, but it's more like a proper catch. Indeed, once people have perfected the delayed feather, which has only got a very small delay, then they tend to keep that as their normal catch, and you'll find you get pretty good finishes if you focus on the delayed feather. Now, Lachlan, I imagine you've done kilometres and kilometres of square blade rowing and delayed feather rowing, and often athletes would start out rowing square blades when they're warming up. So how do you view that sequence of events to use square blade to improve your finish?
So I think square blades is really good for switching athletes on. It's rowing with a feathered blade compared to rowing with a square blade. I reckon a square blade rowing is probably about 5 to 10 times harder than rowing with a feathered blade. Just doing the exercise of square blade rowing means you have to be thinking a lot more. It's a lot harder, and it's actually quite frustrating to try and row with square blades, depending on the conditions and depending on your proficiency at rowing square blades. So when you go back to rowing with the feather, it's a lot easier. The boat's going to feel like it's a lot smoother. It's flowing a lot better. And the movements of the oars on the feather and square is going to make it just a lot easier. Whereas if you were just to go straight out and go rowing with feathered blades only, you wouldn't really have to challenge yourself. And so what ends up happening is you end up with slightly less precise catches and finishes often when you start just rowing feathering, as opposed to if you were to do square blade rowing for a stretch and then go back to feathering and alternating like that. It really switches the brain on as much as anything else, and when you do start rowing feathered blades for the rest of the session, you're going to think that it feels easy and it feels good, and there's a certain relaxation that comes with that that'll help with your rowing. And so the extra stress of rowing square blades is a bit of a tool to make it so you'll be extra relaxed after that and enjoying your row and getting that relaxation and getting that rhythm after that period of frustration and difficult to row technique with square blades.
So that's why a lot of athletes would start out in the warm-up of rowing with square blades. Also, it's only means there is less body movements required, but I guess it sharpens your mind, and I think that's probably pretty important, especially for those that start early morning rowing, just rolled out of bed. Is that where you find it useful to get your focus, Lachlan?
Yeah, I think it's useful any time of day when you're trying to work out what you want to do. Like I said, you sort of get yourself high level of anxiety trying to row square blades, keeping them off the water, tapping out clean and keeping the blades square. All of that really compounds to make quite a frustrating bit of stretch of rowing, and then after that it's a lot easier to do the feathering movement, and you're a lot more precise, because if you try and carry the technique of square blade rowing with feathering, you're going to have, most of the time, you're going to have a cleaner finish and a cleaner catch, and it's going to feel a lot easier, and your precision will be better because of the added pain that square blade rowing has caused beforehand.
And so if you're coaching a crew, school crew, club crew, and it's on a long row and it gets a little bit tedious at times for the athletes, then throw a bit of square blade rowing in there to sharpen their attention span, which may well be quite useful. The other thing I think that's important with the finish as well is the timing. And we've seen a lot of debate over the last few years in particular about the speed of the handle coming away from the finish. And there's all sorts of options available for that. But generally the way that I like to look at it is that the blade comes into the body and leaves the body or the body area at about the same speed. Now, in bigger boats it might be a bit different, but there's certainly been a lot of debate over the last few years about if you're going to pause anywhere, where would you pause? Now, pausing at the finish in a small boat is fundamentally bad for the run of the boat because it leaves a lot of weight in the bow. But when we think about, particularly with sweep rowing, then pausing at a certain point is handy. So Lachlan, you've had a lot of experience with pausing in boats for timing and for getting the crew together and in small boats and large boats. What's your take on the handle speed coming into the finish and coming out of the finish? Clearly coming into the finish it has to be enough speed to keep a bend in the oar and keep the weight on, but once you've started that exit process, how do you view this, the speed of the handle away from the body?
In a single, or if I'm rowing in the stroke seat, I'd be generally wanting to bring the hands into the body. I will go out of the body at the same pace I bring them into the body. So if the boat's moving quickly, that's a bit quicker. If it's moving slowly, it's a bit slower. And I find that gives me a really good rhythm. In other boats, you basically just have to follow whatever the person in front's doing. And if you're in a boat where the stroke or the coach has told everyone to pause at the finish, for whatever reason, like some people think it's good for timing or balance or getting the crew together at some point during the stroke, you just have to follow what they do essentially, and I find that really hard sometimes. It became quite popular in Australia a few years back, when I was rowing in a club eight, I'd gone from rowing my single pretty much exclusively in other boats, and then all of a sudden the Australian men were pausing at the finish during their training rows, and we had quite a good rower who's now at the Australian centre, and he brought that technique back and it was adopted by the crew, and it's filtered down through all sorts of crews. But I found it really difficult to break the what I'd call the rhythm of the finish, like the hands flowing in, the hands flowing out, and put a pause right there. And it took me a good probably 4 training sessions in the 8 before I wasn't constantly, I'd forget that I'd, had that break in rhythm at the finish and had to go to the catch. So I think it really depends on what the crew is doing. Different crews adopt different techniques based on what they think is right. And so it's really about just adapting to the crew. If I had a personal preference, I'd never pause at the finish. I think it destroys the beauty of rowing. So pausing at the finish, you're not flowing. Rowing's all about continuous movement in my book. That's the way I like to row. I can see the benefits of doing a pause or putting pauses throughout the stroke for technique reasons, there are a lot of other reasons as well. It's just I don't think it's worth doing the pause, and I don't like to row that way. But that's a personal preference as much as anything. I wouldn't say it'll stop you from becoming very fast. I think it's something that junior crews can't do very well, rowing with a pause at the finish and continuing forward. They just don't have the same horsepower to make it back up in the drive phase that the elites have. So generally speaking, I wouldn't recommend it. What do you reckon about the pause, Ken?
Oh, I agree completely. I think the critical step, the twofold one you covered very clearly, is that if you get into a crew and you haven't rowed with that crew much before, and you see that a lot in some club crews, but a lot in state representation type crews where you've put together with a group of people that you've never rowed before, I think the first question every athlete should ask is, well, how do we row? Do we have any pausing anywhere? And just make sure that everyone understands what's meant to happen. I think that's really important. As far as the pausing at the finish goes, I'm not a real fan. The reason for pausing at the finish is to practice a fast recovery. And if you're racing, then no one pauses at the finish when they're racing. So it's really a training mechanism, not a racing mechanism. So I wouldn't get too hung up on pausing at the finish. If you don't need to, and as Lachlan says, you get a better rhythm out of the boat if you're not pausing at the finish, that's much more preferable in my book. The other thing you can do, though, which I think is important, is if you pause at about quarter slide or a little bit after, then that's actually a way to get the crew together, and you've got the weight out of the bow. So the weight's out of the bow, you've rocked over, you're in the catch position, and then if you put a pause in there, then that helps to get the crew together. And so a pause at about quarter slide, a little bit after, I think's a really useful way to get the crew together and to set it up without damaging the run of the boat. So particularly with school crews, club crews, non-elite crews, if I put it that way, not international crews, then I'd suggest pausing at the finish is something that's probably better done by pausing at quarter slide. I think you'll get a sensation of rhythm, more so if you pause it at quarter slide than if you do at the finish, and you'll find that the crew can get themselves together and their timing will be well improved. It's an easier spot for balance. The weight's out of the bow. There's lots of good reasons for training with a pause at about quarter slide. So I'd prefer quarter slide. And if you're an elite crew, if you're an elite crew rowing at international events, then sure, there's different techniques you can use. But if you're teaching people to have a good finish in club, school, and even up to the intermediate levels, then I'd suggest that I'd put a pause at quarter slide and not the finish. But again, my preference, I'd say that the hands should go away from the body at the same speed that they come into the body, essentially, and then the body starts to rock over as the hands go away. So from a finish perspective, Lachlan, do you see the first part of the recovery as part of the finish, or is that clearly a recovery, or is it just a merge?
So with the finish for me really is the connecting piece between the drive and the recovery. So part of the drive phase I'd classify as the finish, part of the recovery phase I'd classify as the finish. And it's really about making the transition between those two states, so driving the boat with maximal power for whatever training you're doing or racing you're doing, and then being able to switch gears almost into a recovery mindset, so letting the body recover, letting the boat run, and sort of taking that intense power from the drive phase and then dissipating it a bit and relaxing and keeping the blades off the water and balancing it. It's a very different sort of state, and so the finish is an important part of that state. So when you're drawing the hands in and you tap down, if you don't tap down cleanly, say if you're hitting your body, say if you're washing out, throwing water up in the air, you're not holding the blade in, that's going to jeopardize how relaxed and balanced you can be on the recovery, and so you'll be hurting that part of the boat speed. So you really want to be able to transition between power on to power off in the most delicate way possible, so you can actually recover on the way forward, so on the recovery. And if you don't nail the finish, you don't hold the blade in the water, you don't keep the power on, you don't tap out and feather in a way that the oar doesn't get caught, and be able to come down with the oars off the water to get the catch, then the finish is really the point at which all of that is either made or lost. So if I'm having a bad stroke on the way forward, like I've hit the water, my next point where I think I can, so to get it right for the next stroke, I really need to focus on the finish. Like, you place a blade in the water, that's fine. Drive the boat, it's all pretty simple. The point that you really have to nail for balance on the recovery is the tap down, hands away, flowing over, and that's sort of the finish. The finish for me, and so it's smallish movements, the tap down at the finish, it's gentle movements, it's precise movements. If you're in a sculling boat, it's equal movements with both hands, the tap down. If you tap down one more than the other, you're going to run into trouble. A lot of people who catch crabs and get ejected out of boats, it happens at the finish when they go to tap out and they they mess it up and they get shot out of the boat, essentially. So it's an important part to know what movements you have to do and to be able to execute them in a way that doesn't upset the boat. If you're in a single, your boat, or if you're in a crew boat, you have to be doing finish movements that match the rest of the crew, or at least average out to a good finish for the crew.
Yeah, absolutely. And so essentially where this comes back to a little is that it's almost impossible to have a really good catch unless you've got a good finish. And so the finish is critical, not just for itself, but it's critical for rhythm and it's critical for the catch. So make sure you work hard on your finish, because it'll make the rest of the rowing stroke feel so much better and you'll have a faster boat.
So if you want to find out more about the finish, we have a heap of videos on our website, decentrowing.com. We've got over 1,000 videos there that our members can watch. We've also got a free rowing course that you can enter your email in, and you can see our free rowing course. It's a heap of videos that take you all the way through basic boat setup, all the way through to racing. It's absolutely free. We also have a 12-week training program that you can download at decentrowing.com. It's a free 12-week program. It's got different levels from beginner through to elite, and you can download that program, make adjustments for yourself, and yeah, there's PDF versions of it as well that you can download for free. You just have to put your email in. So until next time, happy rowing.